From NPR News, this is All Things Considered. I'm Michelle Norris.
I'm Robert Siegel, and now a young pianist from Pasadena. His name is Mark Yu. His parents are from China, and he spends a lot of time there. This week, he went to a Los Angeles studio, and he played this Chopin mazurka for us. I met Mark Yu at a fundraising event in Washington, D.C. several weeks ago. It was for victims of the Sichuan earthquake. By coincidence, I was planning to interview his idol this week, the pianist Lang Lang. They're going to play together next month in London, so I thought I'd interview him too. Here's what's so interesting about Mark Yu. He's 9 years old.
My legs are long enough for the pedal, but still my legs aren't straight. Sometimes your legs have to be straight for a pedal, but mine is like slanted for a pedal. But I sometimes have to sit close to a piano or stretch my legs. My left hand can reach an octave, not fast. My right hand, not yet.
So you can stretch over 8 notes with your left hand, but, well, obviously you'll pretty soon have a longer reach than that. I mean, it's just a matter of growing into the piano, huh?
Yeah.
You know, you're now 9 years old. When did you start playing the piano? How old were you when you began?
I can vaguely remember it, but through all the numerous retelling through my mom, I was 2. I was at a friend's party where there were some children singing Mary Had a Little Lamb. So I jumped on their piano and started playing out the tune. But I can remember very well my recital debut when I was 3 playing a G major sonatina by Beethoven.
And when did you decide that you wanted to be a concert pianist?
When I was 3, I asked my mom if I could become a pianist. And I started taking lessons from my mom and then lessons from a teacher.
And how much do you practice in order to be a concert pianist?
Oh, from 0 to 8 hours per day. It really depends whether if I'm traveling or I'm at home, even if I'm in the mood for it.
0 to 8 hours, that's a very big spread. So I assume that if you do 0 one day, it won't be 0 the next day. How many days off can you take from practicing in a row?
1.
The next day you'll be practicing again.
Yeah. Practice makes perfect. You don't want a Beethoven piece to sound like something else that's disrespectful to the composer.
And do you also have to do other schoolwork during the day? Are you going to a regular school or do you have a tutor? How does that work?
My mom actually homeschools me and I have a lot of time to play and I have many friends whom I play with. Mm-hmm. I think other kids are missing out because they're confined with school 5 days a week and 7 hours per day.
Well, I want you to tell me a little bit about what's going to happen in August when you play at the Proms in London, the famous Promenade concerts. You're going to play a duet, I gather, with Lang Lang.
Yes, I'm going to play a four-handed piece with Lang Lang by Schubert.
Playing with Lang Lang sounds like it's going to be very exciting at the Proms in London.
Yes, I'm very excited. It's like winning a lottery or like dining with the muses or other gods.
He's a hero of yours,
so
Lang Lang.
So exciting.
Yes?
Yeah.
How do you explain to people your gift for this? Why do you think you have this talent? Where does it come from?
I have to thank my mom for that because even though when I was still an embryo in our tummy, she would play music from famous pianists on the CD or she herself would sing tunes, nursery rhymes, or play some Beethoven for me.
Well, when you performed in Washington at the fundraising event for victims of the Sichuan earthquake, you chose a piece by Chopin to play, and I'd like you to explain why you played that piece, and then if you could to play it for us.
Sure, I will play it. Well, I'll tell you why I chose that piece first.
Okay.
because Chopin wrote that piece for the victims of the Polish-Russian War. That's why I played that piece for the Chinese victims in the earthquake tragedy. Yeah.
Chopin's Nocturne in C-sharp minor, played by 9-year-old pianist Mark Yu. You can hear more of his playing at npr.org.
You're listening to All Things Considered from NPR News. From NPR News, this is All Things Considered. I'm Michelle Norris.
And I'm Robert Siegel. The piece is by Mozart. The recording in our studio is by Lang Lang. The Chinese-born pianist came to the U.S. when he was 14 to study at the Curtis Institute in Philadelphia. He's now 26. Lang Lang has now written an autobiography, Journey of a Thousand Miles. He writes about how moving to the U.S. meant abandoning what he says was a typically Chinese approach to his career, trying to be number one.
Piano Bravo. Is a little bit squeaky.
The piano is squeaky. Well, you describe this great transition in your life as a pianist when you come to America and the pianist Gary Graffman is your teacher.
Absolutely.
And you and your father, who was with you, just assumed what you should be doing is entering piano competitions.
Yeah.
One after another.
That's
what you do.
I would thought that because I won some international competition when I was very young, So I came to America when I was 14 years old to Mr. Grafman, and he said, in the first lesson, I'm like, I like to be like Tiger Woods, winning all the big competitions.
You want to win the Masters.
Yeah,
piano,
I want, yeah. You know, the Tchaikovsky, Chopin, Mount Clyburn, Leeds, Queen Elizabeth, I want to win five. And he was laughing at me. He said, it's a nice dream, but you don't really need it. He said, do you want a long career or you want a short fame? And I said, of course, long career. Mm-hmm. And he said, so then you just study, then work very hard on your piano playing, but don't think about others. And then one day you will, somebody will probably not able to play in one concert. And if you are succeed as a replacement, then you have a career.
Yeah.
And I didn't believe him in that moment. You know, I was thinking, oh my God, America should be like China because America is also very competitive.
So, yeah, I remember what you write about is you said, what do you mean people don't want to be number one here?
Right.
Michael Jordan wants to be number one here playing basketball.
Yeah. But now I think he's totally right, of course.
How would you describe performing and the reaction of an audience here and in China? Who's at the concert and how do they react to you?
In America, a good advantage is that the American audience are much more professional and much more knowledgeable about classical music than the Chinese audience. The other side is that they are so professional, but they're also pretty old.
Yes.
So
you look at an audience in the United States.
Yeah,
you're looking
like
at a lot of people
60,
who are 60 years old.
It's nothing wrong with over 60, but
I hope not.
But, you know, we also need young people. The thing is, if you go to a concert hall, if 80% or 90% or 100% audience are over 60,
right.
You know, there is a problem.
Because it's a problem if you're planning on a long career because right. those people aren't going to be around.
Maybe they will till 120 years old. But anyway, and in China it's the opposite. The good advantage is Chinese audience are very, very young, younger than me. The bad side is they don't really know classical music, but they like to listen. For the education, it's similar. There are 35 million kids learning piano in China.
35 million kids are taking piano lessons.
Yes, but not enough good teachers. And here in America, I think we have a more good teachers, but sometimes student doesn't work so much.
so you're moving from China to here is a logical...
Yeah, it's kind of really logical because China still don't have... the education system is better. I would say, you know, it's much better, but... It's still no match to Curtis or Juilliard, you know, of the top American schools, no match.
I'd like you to play us something that you've been working on, something you'd like to play for us. I mean, I realize that's hard.
I mean, not hard. I mean, I'm working on Goldberg variation.
On so, Bach's Goldberg variation.
Yeah, so, I mean, I can do whatever. So
now there's a piece which was famously recorded by the great Canadian pianist Glenn Gould, so much so that his critics said this is more Gould than it is Bach. I mean, he's interpreted it so much that he's put his...
I really have an argument with this. First of all, I'm a super fan of Glenn Gould. I love his music. I think he's a genius. Mm-hmm. My argument is very clear. Does anyone knows what Bach played? On Goldberg variation. That's the first question. Mm-hmm. Second is, as a pianist, we all look at the scores. And Goldberg variation, he didn't write so much. You know, the articulation is empty there. Mm-hmm. I mean, you can put all your imagination. So that's why made Glenn Gould so special for Goldberg variation is because Bach gave him unlimited element to make things happening in this work. Unlike, you know, sometimes Beethoven probably will write something, and then you can say he played more Glenn Gould than Beethoven. Mm-hmm. That I can imagine. I can think about it.
Right.
But for Goldberg variation, I really don't see this happens.
So do you approach it by thinking, what is Lang Lang's Goldberg variations going to sound like? Is it a personal creative project for you?
The reason is that because I admire both Glenn Gould's recording so much. And so that's why I'm thinking, you know, I probably should also learn it. What I like to do is to recreate something that it's something quite unique, the sound in Bach, because this is one of the very few Bach pieces that you can create some kind of sound effects. And I think this is certainly, we can do it in many of the passages, like such as... And also the freedom of singing. You know, I worked with Hanunkor on this, the great Austrian, on this variation.
Yes.
Because this guy is kind of an expert on the harpsichord. And he told me that this piece, this passage, you actually can do many, many ritornuto and then, you know, rubatos, but and then to feed it back or something. So he showed me many places. And this opens my eye on how to play Goldberg variation.
Lang Lang, thank you very much for talking with us.
Thank you, Robert.
Lang Lang's book is Journey of a Thousand Miles. Since, he says, his book is about fulfilling one's dreams, he played Schumann's Traumerei, or Dreaming, for us. You can hear and see Lang Lang play Beethoven in our studios. You can read an excerpt from his new book and watch a Lang Lang slideshow, all at the music section of our website, npr.org. There is another young pianist, actually very young, who is Chinese-American and who absolutely idolizes Lang Lang. We'll hear from him tomorrow.
You're listening to All Things Considered from NPR News. This weekend, there's a remarkable event in Detroit, the Sudanese Music and Dance Festival. At a time of genocide in Darfur and other conflicts in Sudan's south, east, and north, the festival brings together musicians from across the African nation to perform on one stage. It's a sharp contrast from real life, the very picture of Sudanese harmony and unity. The festival debuted in Chicago last week. Banning Air was there, and he has this report.
33 musicians took the stage at Chicago's majestic Millennium Park. They formed an orchestra of brass, strings, percussion, guitars, and keyboards, who together backed 8 singers from different regions. In all, it was a pageant of the Sudan that could be. There was Ali Al-Sagaid representing the country's dominant orchestral pop tradition. Omar Issas delivered driving rhythms and passionate melodies from his home region, Darfur. Two sisters from the 1970s supergroup Al Balabal, the Nightingales, brought in the flavor of Sudan's Nubian North. Sudan is Africa's largest country, home to some 300 ethnic groups and practitioners of Islam, Christianity, and animist religions. It achieved independence in 1956, but after a long history of divide and rule politics by Egyptian, Turkish, British, and Sudanese leaders, Sudan is still struggling to become a nation. That struggle was on display in Chicago. The Sudanese community there includes many so-called lost boys, refugees from the Civil War in the South. Some of them wondered why the South was not more strongly represented in the concert program. There was one Southern singer, a young man who goes by the name Dynamic.
Our southern part of Sudan, I think our music is more like the underground music in America. There are a lot of musicians, but it's the opportunities. They don't have the ability to say, you know what, I have a song in mind. Let me get in my car and go to the studio and lay it down.
With an overtly political reggae song called Inner City War, Dynamic was something of a fish out of water rehearsing with musicians from Khartoum's musical elite. But the artists were determined to overcome cultural, stylistic, and historic divisions. Here's Hadja Talsum from Al Balabal.
Everywhere there is a problem. It's not only West, it's not only South. In the North as well, people are also dying. So if everybody is talking about his problem particularly, then who's going to represent the whole country? It's us.
As the concert neared, there were issues, funding shortages, late arrivals that disrupted the tight rehearsal schedule, visa complications that stranded musicians in Khartoum and Cairo, and most dangerous of all, a false rumor that the largely hated Sudanese regime was behind the festival. Veteran Sudanese producer and orchestra director Yusuf El Mosli responded.
I told them, how come Lost Boys gonna do something with Sudanese government? How come city of Chicago can deal with Sudanese government? Impossible.
As the concert began, the elegant music of Sudan swept over Millennium Park, where a crowd was gathering despite iffy weather. Later on, a fierce Chicago thunderstorm struck, forcing the most determined fans, including many Sudanese, to the sheltered zone close to the stage, where they shouted and waved, creating the atmosphere of a street party. Omar Essas represented Darfur with mighty voice and soaring spirit, and Al Balabo, the last to sing, showed why they were once called the Supremes of Sudan. The big surprise for musical director El Mosli turned out to be that young southern singer, Dynamic.
Dynamic is brave because he know the voice is the most important part of the game. So he played with his voice, he plays with communicating with the audience. I loved him very much.
In the concert's moving finale, artists, organizers, and Lost Boys sang and danced together before a sea of waving arms. And for one beautiful moment, Sudan became a nation. For NPR News, I'm Banning Air.
This is NPR, National Public Radio.